Vibe tribes. Hello, people. Welcome back to another episode of Vibes and Tribes with me, your host, Bio, Baze, B Diddy, whatever you want to call me. You know, we back, we cooking. Happy to be here. Just to, you know, for the listeners who are listening in for the first time, you know, Vibes and Tribes is a podcast where we catch a vibe, you know, with a member of the tribe, hence the name. And what we look to do is shine a light on, you know, different industries and different pathways that people, can take to being successful, because there isn't one standard journey that people can take. So with that, let's get cooking. I'd like to introduce our guest for today, Jesse. So I don't know if you want to just quickly introduce yourself.
Yes. Hi. My name is Jesse Praise. I work for a hedge fund and I make videos on TikTok and YouTube.
Come on.
So that's Jesse Praise _ on TikTok. Jesse Boom. Praise on YouTube. I'm really happy to be here and thank you for this opportunity.
Bro, great. He's already plugged the TikTok, the YouTubes and everything, you know.
It's got to be done.
And, you know, on that note, before we jump into it, yeah, make sure you like, subscribe, comment, share at vibesandtribes_. Linktree is going to be in the show notes. So yeah, with that, let's get cooking. What we like to do here is, first of all, you know, what's your job title currently, Jesse?
So I am an investment solutions associate.
Jeez, okay. Investment solutions, and that's like, I've spoken to you before, that's hedge funds, right?
Yes, so I currently do investment solutions for a hedge fund.
A hedge fund, okay. But before we get into, you know, what that involves, like we like to do on a podcast, let's go way back. Or for you, not so far back, actually, quite recent. But yeah, I like to start in secondary school. So where did you go to secondary school? What area, the name of the school, everything, give it to us.
So I think it's a bit more interesting if I go a bit further back.
Oh, we're going even further back. Bro, let's do it then. Let's do it.
So I was born in Belgium.
Come on.
I stayed there till I was about seven.
What's the native language?
So they speak French, Dutch, and a bit of German some areas, but yeah.
And what do you have cooking?
So I've got French.
Come on.
French.
Is it parlez-vous français? Is that you say?
Parlez-vous français.
Un petit peu. But yeah, go on. Sorry, continue.
Yeah. So I went to school in Belgium and then moved to England when I was seven. We first moved to Croydon.
Okay.
If you know Croydon.
We know it.
It's a different country.
Yeah. And how did you find out? Because I'm assuming that at the time you couldn't speak English.
So my parents are Nigerian, and obviously Nigerians speak English.
Yeah,
so
they do.
I learned English and French at the same time.
Oh, okay. Lovely.
It was still a bit hard because obviously I knew conversational English, but I didn't know things like slang.
I remember there was
this one time when, I can't remember, I did something by accident in class. I was like eight or something.
Yeah.
And then the teacher was like, "Oh, did you do it on purpose?" It was something bad. I didn't do it deliberately, but it was something bad. And the teacher was like, "Oh, did you do it on purpose?" And I was like, yes, I did. Because I didn't know that purpose meant deliberate.
Yeah.
It didn't end well.
Coming from a different country, all right, we might as well go into it. Yeah, how did you find the primary experience then?
You know what? The first few months was obviously a bit tough, considering I knew the language, but again, it's a different culture. People in Belgium are very different to people in England. And so I was quite a blunt person, even as a child. And so it doesn't really tend to go well with English British people.
Yeah.
You tend to be a bit more, you know.
Don't bottle it up. Don't say anything.
Yeah. They beat around the bush sometimes.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the best. But initially, so that was just initially. But after that, yeah, it was fine. In fact, I actually enjoyed it.
And did you spend all of your childhood in Croydon?
No. So then I moved to Kent, which is where I'm still now.
Okay.
And did the rest of my school in there. But when I say Kent, I don't mean like Ashford or like Sevenoaks or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
One of the not as nice parts.
Okay. Do you know what I've realised in life is that no matter where you go, everywhere's got an end. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I hear you, bro, when you say that. So going back to what you were saying. So yeah, where did you go to school?
So secondary school, as I said, you know, that was in Kent.
So
I went to the school called St. John's.
Okay. Was it a private,
comprehensive,
public, comprehensive, mixed, all boys?
Mixed.
Okay. Yeah. Nice.
And it was a comprehensive mixed school, Catholic school. It was, how do I put this? Speak
your mind, bro.
It was trash.
Oh, wow.
I can't even lie to you, but
What was trash about it? The teaching, the people, everything?
Do you know what it is? It's people try. Some of the teachers try, whereas some of the others just don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because really and truly, they don't have to. Mm-hmm. And so if you're someone who wants to push beyond and try to excel, it didn't really facilitate that drive.
That's mad. So I don't know, I'm putting you on the spot here, but could you give an example?
I'll give you a perfect example. Yeah. So I remember when we were in year, I think it might have been year 11. Mm-hmm. One of our heads of years came to speak to us and was just like, oh yeah, you guys should definitely go to uni. It's the best time of your lives. And guess what? You won't even have to pay because student finance, if you don't pay after a certain amount of time, they take away the debt.
Mad.
Now, to me, at the time, obviously, I didn't really clock what that meant.
Yeah.
You know, most people, initially, when you hear that, you might not understand. Mm. But essentially, what he was saying is that we won't earn enough to ever have to pay it off.
Mad.
And when I clocked that when I actually went to uni,
mm.
and I was just like, wait, what? Yeah. it took me a second. I was like, wait, what? But
so you don't feel like, so like you said, so some of the teachers tried, mm. but you don't think that, yeah, they were pushing the boundaries to get you guys at the school to be the best. And is that you, because of the kind of person that you are, did everybody at the school kind of feel like that?
I wouldn't say everybody, because most people there were content with just
mediocrity.
Exactly. I don't want to sound like elitist or anything, but it's just true. A lot of people were content with mediocrity because that's what they were around.
Mm.
And so if you don't know you can do better, if you don't know what's out there,
mm.
you won't necessarily try, especially when you're in a group of people who are also doing similarly to you. So you'd never think, I'm not doing that bad.
Yeah. So with that, it sounds like obviously you didn't have that mentality or mindset. Why not then?
I can't lie, I got a shout out to my parents, but
okay, come on.
When I was a kid, I used to hate it when he's, you know, come back from school, they make you study, or on the weekend you're like, go read your book.
Yeah.
it was annoying, but I thank God that they really pushed that, because failure was not an option.
Mm.
It was just not an option.
Yeah.
You know, when it came to school, if you're doing badly, there's a lot you could do. Sometimes you could be riding in class and they'd allow it in the sense that as long as your grades are still looking good, they'd allow, obviously every now and then you might get, you know.
Yeah, I hear you.
Wait till that comes home. But even still, they had a very big emphasis on doing well in school and making sure that you have a good future. So that I guess that's what put me on a different path.
Do you think that's a cultural thing? And the reason I ask that is because I've got Nigerian parents, mm-hmm. and I've said it previously that I had a very similar upbringing in that, maybe not so much work on the weekends, mm-hmm. but my parents were always looking for ways to extract more out of me. And like the example I've given in the past is like, at parents' evening, I could get a perfect report, like, you know, in maths, in every exam, he got, you know, 20 out of 20. And then my dad would be like, yeah, but was he talking in class? Like, didn't even matter.
Why didn't you get 21?
Yeah. Like, there was always something. Like, they never let you, like, yeah, relax. So, yeah, do you think it is cultural?
I think it definitely is cultural, because it sounds bad, but there's this thing in Nigerian culture where parents like to show off, or Nigerians in general like to show off.
Mm.
And one of the biggest flexes you can have is if your son is doing well, your daughter's doing well, because obviously it reflects on them as good parents.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you go to church and say, hey, my son went to Cambridge, my son went to Exeter, something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
That's something that they like doing. And so, I will say, I think when you've been in a country where you can try as hard as you want, but because of circumstances, you can still fail miserably.
Yeah, that's a fact.
You know, when you get out of that country and you go to a place where, yes, there's certain things which aren't 100% the best or whatever, but you have a different outlook. And so you take whatever benefits you can get, or whatever, you know, you try to take advantage of as many things as you can.
Yeah.
And they're aware, I think a lot of Nigerians are aware, that education is one of the biggest equalizers that you can possibly have in society.
Yeah, facts. This is great. So with that in mind, I suppose a question that comes to my mind is, throughout school, did you know what you wanted to do from an early age, or did it come to you at a specific point?
I'll be honest with you, I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Okay, fair.
So, you know, my parents always pushed me towards more STEM subjects, I guess. You know, there was,
for those who don't know what is STEM,
so that's myself, technology, engineering and maths.
Okay, cool.
So anything to do with that is considered a STEM
subject.
So they always pushed us towards that. And so for me, there was never being a writer in the books.
Yeah.
Or being an actor. Or even if I, let's say I was sick of football and wanted to be a footballer, my parents would still say, you're still going to uni, you're still studying maths or law or something like that.
Yeah. So, I'm the same. So you didn't know what? Okay, so let's just switch it up a bit. So I've got an understanding of your school, you know, teachers weren't great. Mm. Sounds like some of the students weren't great, shall we say. How did you find school from a social element? Were you there to make friends? Did you have a big social life, or did you spend a lot of time like in your books, etc., etc.?
I think for me, I never really had a problem making friends.
Okay.
And that's something that I think I've also taken throughout the rest of my life so far.
Mm.
You know, from day one of year seven, the people I was friends with then, I'm still friends with now.
Yeah.
You know, it was never really an issue. We kind of did our own thing, and then later on, our own thing became a lot of everyone else's thing. So our group grew, and we had a lot of friends during school. So I never really had much of an issue with that. What the issue came when it came to trying to do stuff on the weekends.
That was
the issue. So a lot of times it was like you go to your parents and say, "Oh, can I go to Blue?" I don't know if you know about Blue Water.
That was a place that
everyone at that age is going to in Kent. You know, you ask your parents, "Oh, can I go to Blue Water?" And you'd be like, "Why are you going?
Yeah.
Why do you need friends?"
Bro, do you know? Things like that. Do you know what I used to do? Mum and Dad, look, love you now. You know, I'm a good person. But whenever I wanted to go like out, I'd just be like, "Oh, I'm staying at my boys." Like, just a little sleepover thing. Watch the wrestling.
Yeah.
And then that's how I had to do it, because I'm getting the exact same response, and they ain't letting me out. But I'm thankful for it though.
That's the thing.
It kept me grounded.
Yeah, I'm extremely thankful for it now. But yeah, obviously, exactly. During the times like, why can't I go out? Like, why can't I do this? Why can't I do that?
Yeah,
and like, this is from like year seven to like year nine times. Like, so I remember when the first time they let me go to like Bluewater with my friends, I think I was about 14 or something.
Yeah,
and I was so gassed. even though they only gave me like £10 to pay for everything I was doing, I was still gassed. I was happy.
Bro, the £10 is a lot, bro.
It goes a long way.
Back maybe not now with inflation.
Yeah. Oh, maybe not now, but back then it went a long way.
Back then.
I still got my KFC and cinema.
So. Come on, there we go. So with that, we'll talk about GCSEs first.
Mm.
You don't have to share, but you know, did you do well? Did you do badly?
GCSEs, I did pretty decent. I think I got 1 A star, 6 A's, 3 B's.
Jeez.
It's not that good. Especially when I'm compared to like my siblings. It was like
but bro, like it is, you can say that, but it's good, bro. Mm. Like when you put yourself in like a percentile, that's high. All right, so with that in mind, did you go to the same sixth form?
Yeah. Biggest mistake of my life, I can't lie to you.
Wow. All right, we're gonna get into that. So how do you go about deciding what you want to do for A level?
So I think I was a bit petty, I'm not gonna lie. So my brother had done maths, further maths, physics, chemistry,
and
French.
Okay.
So he did 5 A levels.
That's mad. I thought 4 was mad. Yeah, 5 is crazy.
He's another level, I'm not gonna lie to
you. Yeah.
Another level. But so he did that, and I think for me, but he wanted to go into engineering.
Mm.
But for me, my parents were really trying to push me to do engineering and to go into that field. But I was just like, nah, I'm not going to do that.
Engineers make the bread though, bro.
You'd be surprised how many engineers go into finance.
Oh, okay.
You'd be surprised.
I'll get to that.
But so I picked similar subjects to him when it came to A-levels. So I did maths, further maths, physics and French. So I only did 4. So
French is that easy, eh? Yeah,
because
I see what you did there, bro.
That's basically what it was.
Yeah, I hear that.
But for me, it was just like, okay, I like maths. Maths has always been the thing I've been good at. Like, I had a bit of, growing up, I think I had a bit of OCD.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when I'd say sentences, the words I said in that sentence, I'd look at each individual letter and look at their position in the alphabet. So E equals 5, Z equals 26. And I would add them up, and they had to be a multiple of my age at the time.
I was
a bit OCD, but I liked maths. I loved maths. That was like my thing. So that was already, maths, it had to be done.
Yeah.
And then physics, initially I wasn't too sure what else to take other than, you know, like a something adjacent to maths, and I'd done well in additional science and core science.
Okay, so, nice.
You know, physics is the one to go for then.
Bro, I can't lie to you. It's hurting my head even just hearing about what you did at A level. So yeah. So how was your A level experience? So you said you had a good time throughout school. You know, you've touched upon the fact that it was the biggest mistake of your life. Like, why did you think that? And yeah, how was that sixth form experience?
You know what? Again, I thank God for taking me where he's taken me and, you know, having certain experiences in my life. But me going to the school I went to for sixth form was just one of the biggest mistakes I made, man, honestly.
But you're so young. Like, how are you to know?
Do you know what it is?
Did your brother go there?
Yeah, he did. However, me and my brother are a bit different. And also my situation, like, once I get to it, you'll see what I'm saying.
Okay.
So, basically, how do I put this? Okay, so I picked those four in my A level.
Yeah.
And then in A2, I dropped physics because I realized I don't need it to go into finance. By then, I decided, yeah, I want to do a finance degree.
Okay.
And so I did that. And then, so I was doing maths, first maths, and French. And obviously, I was the only French speaker in my school, so I was the only one that picked it for, well, there was one other French girl, but she didn't take it on to A2. And so I picked those three and then carried on with them. And maths was going well, I was banging it out. Verb maths was going decently well. French was going calmly. And I remember, first of all, when you're surrounded by people that you're, like, this sounds bad, but when you're surrounded by people that you're quote unquote better than, I'm not saying that I am as a person, but in some ways I was smarter than them.
Yeah.
You get really comfortable because you get really complacent because really and truly, oh, well, I'm the best here, you know, like I don't really have to do much more. I don't really have to push myself that much harder.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really, I guess, like I said, complacent. And even though, yeah, I was working hard for maths because I liked the subject, I didn't push myself as hard as I would have if I'd gone to like a grammar school, which was 2 minutes down the road from my school, where I definitely wouldn't have been one of the smartest. So and so that competition would have made me push me to work harder.
Yeah.
And so that was my first mistake with that. Just the idea that I was surrounded by people on either similar level or not as academically driven as me, or their goals weren't as...
I hear that, but just to kind of flip that, right, there's always going to be a smartest person in every class. I hear you, but the cream always rises to the top. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, but if you're aware that you're not the best in terms of... if you're aware of the fact that you're a big fish in a small pond, right... It's always better to go to a bigger pond.
I think
personally.
Okay, but and here's another question. I like this debate actually. This is juicy. But you know, you mentioned your brother. Is he an older brother?
Yeah, older brother.
Was that not competition enough to strive to try and beat him?
It's different. Like, I'll be honest. Like, and don't hate me for saying this, putting your information out there. No one knows his name anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But he got like 5 A stars in A level. Like, there was. I knew that was a different level. Like, I was very much aware that's a different level.
Okay, so I'm clear on this. So you want to go to a bigger pond, but you don't want to go to the ocean. You just want to go to
a
medium-sized pond. Okay, but all right, I've heard you with that. So yeah, that was the first mistake you made. Sorry, and then carry on.
Second mistake. So I remember this was out of my control.
But yeah.
Looking back, based on how the school did certain things, I should have clocked. But so I did, I was the only person that did French, as I said. And then I did my French A-level, all good. Going about life, summertime comes, we're living life, we're enjoying whatever. Results day comes. And then I go to school with one of my boys. And
is this AS?
This is A-level. This is the
final one.
The final one.
Okay, wow.
So I go to do it. And then, what's it called? We get there. And we're trying to find our names, and like the teacher's trying to find our names so they give us the letter.
Yeah, the envelope. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I get mine, and I see my grades for maths, further maths, It's like A in maths, B in further maths. Like I was somewhat disappointed with the maths grade because I was really pushing for the A star.
Yeah.
And like there was this, you had to do this weird thing to get an A star in maths. You had to get an average of 90 in two specific modules. Even if you got 90 in one level four, yeah, it didn't matter. You had to get 90 in those two specific ones. So I missed out on the A star by just a bit, which vexed me.
Mm.
And then for French, I had a Q. And I was like, what's a Q? Like, at first I was a bit confused. I was like, what's a Q? But I didn't really pay too much attention. And then the deputy head comes to me and he's like, we need to have a word with you about your grade. I was like, okay. And I was like, fair enough. So then he takes me upstairs. And like, this is a guy that...
Can I guess? What? You were so good, they thought you cheated.
Nah,
oh, sorry.
It's worse.
Okay.
It's worse. Like this is a guy that's taught me since he's 7. Like I was friends with his son as well. Like this is a guy. Like he's one of the safest teachers I've ever met. He comes to, he like sits me down and he's like, so there's been an issue with your grade. So I'm guessing you've seen that you have a Q on your paper. And I was like, yeah. Like what is that? And he was just like, so obviously you were the only person in the class in the school that did A level French, and whilst moving your paper from the school to the exam board, your paper's been lost in transit.
Oh my goodness.
And I was like, initially I was like, oh, okay, fair enough. And then he was like, so what do we do now? And he was like, so you either take a C in French, or you retake the year, take a year out to wait to see what happens.
That's crazy.
Or retake the year. And initially, I was like, fair enough, cool, here's what it is. Started walking out, and I started walking home. And then 10 minutes on my walk home, I started deeping. Oh, wait, like, this means I can't go to uni.
Yeah.
This means I can't go to uni. Like, wait, what? And I just got vexed. Mm. Like, I got so angry. Like, I remember coming home and just, like, trying to explain to my parents, and they were baffled.
What were you predicting? Like an A, obviously.
Yeah, I was predicting an A. Like, they were baffled. Like they were just like, wait, what's? They thought I was lying. They thought I just made it up. But yeah, they lost my paper, and
there wasn't even an option to just retake the exam.
No, it was a new exam. Like, retake the year. I had to retake the whole.
That's ridiculous.
French year.
So what was the outcome of that?
So they found the paper like 3-4 months later, but obviously you get your results in August. So this was what.
End of the year.
End of the year.
Uni's already started.
There was just no point.
To
me going at the time, and then they messaged me or they sent me a letter saying, oh, we found your paper. You got an A, and that's your grade. And I was like, by then I just didn't care anymore. Like,
what did you decide before they found your paper that you were gonna not redo the year or?
I just I was so off of education. I'm done.
All right. So just to bring this as a roundabout point, then I suppose, what would be your advice to anybody listening to this potentially deciding on the A levels that they want to do?
First of all, your A levels are actually extremely important. Mm. You know, a lot of people say once you get to uni, your A levels don't matter. They actually really do.
Yeah.
In some ways, they do prepare you for whatever it is you will do in your degree. Not to the extent that they could, but obviously I went to a comprehensive school, so it's a bit different to what they teach at a grammar school or a private school.
Comprehensive schools are great, by the way. I went to one as well. I'm going to shout mine out because mine was great. Carry on.
definitely pick, be careful with what you're picking because a lot of people... They do whatever they want during A levels, and then when it comes to actually picking university degrees, it turns out I have less options than I thought I would because I picked subjects that
don't
care for.
So
always make sure you think about that. But then also when it comes to deciding where to go for sixth form, please, I beg you, make sure you pick well because the only reason I didn't go to the grammar school. Because there were two grammar schools in my town or where I live. There were two grammar schools. The only reason why I didn't go was because I couldn't be bothered to walk there. That was literally the only reason.
Crazy.
My friends, but like three of my friends walked over to hand in their results. Like they all got in.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I can't bother. I'll just go home instead.
Yeah.
So don't ever let laziness or anything stupid like that stop you from going out of your comfort zone or just, you know, doing things that you know you're meant to be doing.
I hear that. So, all right. So we continue with the journey then. So they found your paper. You've got an A. So that puts you at AAB. So do you have to take a gap year?
Yeah. I'll go full C. Yeah.
Okay, so you take a gap year. What do you get up to in the gap year?
So during my gap year, so luckily, just before, like a few weeks before, why did I say luckily? It's not even luckily. In fact, once I get to you, you'll see.
Yeah.
But like a few weeks before I got my results, I got a job at JD.
Okay.
So I was working at JD Sports in Bluewater. That was an experience. So I was doing that, and I remember like my first. So as I said, I'm someone that I tend to always want to push, and I don't always like being comfortable at where I'm at. So I remember like my first 2 weeks, I asked one of the managers, "What does it take? I'm going to be." I said to them, "Like, I'm definitely going to be here for a year at the very least. So, what do I do?" Because obviously back then I didn't know that. What's it called?
You were going.
Sorry. This was a few weeks. This was like 3 weeks after
the debacle.
Yeah. A week or two after.
So you don't even know that you're going. Like you're going to get your results to go to uni, as an example.
So when I started was when when I started at JD, I didn't know about.
Three weeks later, I'd known.
I say to them, "Oh, I'm definitely going to be here for at least a year. So, what do I need to do to become a supervisor or become get on the management team?" So they gave me a list of things. I think they thought I was. Like I was joking or something, but it made them give me a list of things I need to do to become a supervisor slash manager or whatever. And then I started doing working through those things. And within 3 months, I remember it was like Christmas time. It was like the Boxing Day sales. Like they had given me the whole textiles, so the clothing section to manage. So all the staff for that at that point were technically under me, even though they weren't paying me for it. But I had like. I was one deciding where people were going. I was one dealing with customers when they had like problems.
Escalations.
So I was in charge of all that. And then what's it called? I remember one of the two of the one, I think it was region manager and area manager, both had seen me working and like, putting in shifts. Cause I can't remember. There was times I think Boxing Day I did like 13 and a half hours. But like in that whole day, it was mad. I think it was Boxing Day or one of the other days. And then, they were like to the management in my store, like, oh, make this guy a supervisor, like, bring him on, like, he's good.
Okay, so before we get into you becoming a supervisor, so I started out in retail. I was at River Island, come on, shout out. Did a few months at Primark as well, humble myself. But I suppose, what skills do you think you learned working in retail, and are any of them transferable to what you're doing at the moment?
Oh, 100%. My two questions. 100%. So first of all, I think everyone should work in retail a day in their life. I'm not gonna lie, because first of all, it makes you realize that you are not shit. I'm sorry. Oh, am I allowed to?
No, yeah, you can swear. You can swear.
You ain't shit. Like people will treat you like duh, and you just have to take it. You just have to smile. Like I have some stories, but that's for another day.
But
you just have to take it, and I think that's something that you kind of learn. That you have to learn if you're wanting to go into finance, because there's going to be a lot of things that people put you through or say to you or do to you that it's not nice. That it's just not nice, but you just have to firm it and move on.
Yeah.
And then also, it really helps with your speaking, and just if you're someone that, who actively tries to, you know, do well in retail and actually tries to help customers.
Yeah.
You know, you have to go up to them and ask, "Hey, you're okay? Is anything I can help you with?
Yeah.
Or what is it I can do for you today?"
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to get aired.
100%.
They'll walk straight past you. You just have to hold your L and just, you know, just keep your fist in your on your left, like Arthur or something. But then even just that helps so much when it comes to trying to, what's the word? When it comes to dealing with people in the world of finance. So my job is investment solutions, and a lot of that is meeting with investors, clients, and just even people within the company. You need to be able to speak to them, you need to be able to code switch, you need to be able to, you know, think of how best to approach them. And I think that's something you learn a lot if you learn about a lot when you're working in retail if you're actually actively trying to you know, to do well in it.
Yeah, so I think the two things I've heard there, so the first one is resilience. Yeah, which is you get knocked down, but you know, how do you build yourself back up and go again? And then the second one, I think I'll kind of position it as, yeah, being empathetic and mirroring. So yeah, being able to speak to a customer and understand their language to, you know, get an upsell or get them to buy another product.
Exactly.
And then in investment banking, you know, understanding their portfolios, XYZ, XYZ. Okay, so we'll wrap that up. You then become a supervisor, so...
So I didn't.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't.
Okay.
So the guy tells him...
The plot thickens.
Yeah. The guy tells him, make him a supervisor.
Like, yeah.
He's sick. And then they sit me down in the office, and they're like, oh, you've done so well. Like, we're really proud of you. We want to bring you onto the team, as onto the management team. I was like, great. This is amazing. And then they're like to me, oh, but one thing, you can't go to uni. And I was like...
Wow.
Wait. Why? And they were like, oh, because we don't want to invest in you and for you just to go and leave us. And I was like, yeah, but you knew this when I first asked you what I needed to do to become a supervisor.
Yeah.
And you said it was fine. And also, it's not as if I won't be coming back during summer. It's not as if I can't transfer to another store.
Mm.
Like, there's stores all over the country. There shouldn't be that much of an issue.
Mm.
And then they were like, yeah, no, we just, you have to leave uni out and just focus on it. And you know what? Do you know what's mad? Initially, I was vexed, but then I actually considered it because, as I said before, I was so done with education. Like, that whole thing with my old school, just it really put me off of it.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, when I was, 18, 19 at the time, I'm making money, like, especially...
Cheap trainers.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
JD, yeah. Like, the swag's on point.
And especially back then, JD was weekly pay.
Yeah.
So I'm getting money whenever I need it.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
It can give you the illusion of, I've got money.
I've
made it.
Yeah.
But then I just started getting angry again. I was like, you man just used me. Because really and truly, you knew what I wanted. You knew where I was thinking of going in the future. But you just used me to get good work out of me. And then basically you were like,
they gave you, like, they put you in an impossible situation.
Pretty much.
Do you know what? I had something similar. So when I worked at River Island, I quit to go university, but very quickly I realized I need peas. So I was working in the Lakeside one.
Yeah.
Then I started working in Southampton, which is where I went to university.
But I was going to go there, you know.
Bro, fantastic uni. But then the crazy thing happened. So we get to summer, end of my first year. And so I'm obviously a part-time worker. So I get 12 hours a week. And I kind of go to them, is there any more hours available? Because I'm here, like, I can be here all summer, but if not, like, I want to go back to Essex. Like, I can't just stay here and work 12 hours a week. I'm like, what is that?
You can't live off.
And they were like, yeah, you can't transfer. You have to leave. Yeah, they were like, either you stay and do the 12 hours a week, we can't give you any more hours, or you leave. So I bounced, and I went home for summer. Crazy.
So
it just like, it seems like in retail, they put you in these like impossible situations.
But do you know what's mad? They expect you to give it your all, even though you know in your head, the moment they don't need you, they will ditch you so calmly, without any hesitation. That's the crazy thing I can't get my head around.
I think to the listeners, I think one thing I would say is that I'm a big believer in karma. And putting out good energy into the universe. And I mean that in a sense that if you give your all and you just continue to give your all, yes, JD, they might flop you. But at the moment where you need it, that karma is going to come good and you're going to get that promotion and you're going to get that whatever. So bringing it back. Okay, so you leave, I'm assuming.
I stayed.
Okay.
But you know what I did? I remember I was full time at the time. I turned my availability down to one day a week.
Okay.
And I booked one day off for the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Okay.
So basically I didn't go to work.
Yeah.
I didn't go to work for 5 weeks and I came back and I just didn't really care anymore.
Yeah.
I still worked because for me it was like when I'm getting money and I was saving up for a car, which I still have to this day actually.
Okay, come on.
And then what's it called? Yeah, once I got my car, I was like, okay, I only need to work this amount of days to pay for it all.
Okay.
By the way, quick advice for young people out there. If you're thinking of getting a car, make sure you finance it. Because when it comes time for you to buy a house, you need to make sure you've got good credit. And that's something that I think a lot of people initially, I remember when I was younger, I used to think, oh, why would you finance a car? Why wouldn't you just buy it straight out? It's actually so much smarter, honestly.
Building up your credit.
Yeah,
honestly. Nice. All right, so just bringing it back to the education side then. So at what point, so when do you start thinking about university again after everything that's happened?
So it's after this. After this happened, I was like, yeah, I'm definitely going to uni. Like,
okay.
Yeah, the fact that I can put in so much work, not get paid that much, and, you know, these men could still do me this way.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to uni.
So how do you make the decision with regards to, number one, what you want to do at university, number two, the university you go to?
So with how I'd made a decision and what to do, even before this point, I already knew I was wanting to go into finance.
Okay.
So as in to do a finance degree, because that's something that I wanted to do whilst I was in, when I was applying for universities.
Yeah.
The year before, that's what I was applying for. So I actually applied to Southampton.
Okay.
And, to be fair, they still gave me, even after I only had the two A-levels, they still gave me the place.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
But for me, it was just like, I want to get my grade.
Yeah, so, of course.
And then, what's it called? Sorry. And then, with what I, universities-wise, what I picked, I just wanted to go as far away as possible. Look, I wanted to get as far away as my hometown as possible.
Yeah.
Sorry, one step back. With the subjects I picked, so I did I picked accounting and finance basically.
Yeah.
The reason why I picked that was because I just didn't want to do what was, my parents wanted me to do engineering. And my brother, and I was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. Just because he's doing it, I'm not going to do it. Because I knew the moment I did that, they would be comparing, your brother did this, your brother did that. Like,
yeah.
There was no point for me.
Okay.
But in terms of universities wise, I went to, I don't know if I should say this on here, because
it's up to you, bro. This is your moment.
Basically, on my TikTok, right, I always I had no issues with telling people where I went in there, because I went to Russell Group Uni. Like, it starts off as a bad uni thing. It was like 16, 17 at the time. But then one guy made a comment on my videos once, and since that day I said I will never say where I went. And so I'm trying to keep up.
I know where he went, and let's just say it was very far from Kent. It was as pretty much as north as you can go in the UK. So okay, you went to the north of the land. You did accounting and finance.
Yeah.
So talk to me about university. How did you find it?
You know what, I was in uni for 4 years altogether. It's some of the best times of my life, I'm not gonna lie.
Come on.
And it's, and I actually, now that I've been out for over about a year and a bit now, I think back and I regret so many things in terms of not utilizing the time I had, because you will never have as much free time as you will during uni.
100%.
Honestly, you have so much free time that you will never get back once you're out of uni, unfortunately, unless you take time off work or like extended periods of time off work. I mean, and also it's such a great place for networking.
Oh, right.
You don't understand. So
facts.
I got my first experience in an investment bank because of this one guy I lived with in first year.
Okay, great.
So I remember we lived together in first year. He was, how do I put this? He's someone who's definitely on the spectrum a bit. Like, I think he actually was diagnosed.
Yeah.
So some of the people in the flat were a bit mean to him, but he was so nice, you wouldn't even be able to tell. But I was always nice to him, because to me, like, what's the point in being rude to this guy? Like, he's actually,
you don't get anything from it. Yeah.
And so then he always had, like, me and him were always cool. So then second year comes, and I remember we were just chilling in the library doing work. And then he was
like, were you on the same course?
No, we're different course. He did economics, so I did accounting and finance.
Cool.
And I remember we were just chilling. And then he was like to me, oh yeah, my dad's the CEO of this bank. I was like, huh? why have you never told me this? He was like, oh, you never asked. And I was like, fair enough.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? So if I wanted to get like an internship, what, could he sort me out? And he was like, yeah, I can ask him right now, he will do it. And I was like, please, I'm begging you, please.
Yeah.
So then a few days later, his dad messages me.
Wow.
Honestly, it's mad.
Wow.
His dad messages me, and then he's like, oh yeah, I can give you an internship. It'll be unpaid, but you know, you can you can come in a few times a week for the next few weeks and, you know, do that for a while.
Sorry to cut you up. What is it that made you want to do an internship? Like, why did you know that an internship was the right thing that you needed to do?
So one thing I'll say about going to a Russell Group uni is that they make it very clear about what you need to do to get a good job.
I didn't even do it, man. Yeah, you're right. I missed the lectures when they said that, man. You know, no, you're right.
They make it very clear that you need, there's certain things you need to get a good job. You need to get experience.
Yeah.
Or you need to know people. Mm. And if you don't know, have those two, you're... It doesn't matter what grade you get, it's peak. You won't get a job when you get out of uni. So from first year, I remember I didn't really try too hard to like get internships, but like I did like a couple applications, but then I got a few no's. I got like what, 3-4 no's, and I was like, you know, I can't bother. Let me just not. Then second year comes, I started doing a lot more applications. I'm still getting no's.
It happens.
But this guy, obviously, he gives me this, like, he gives me this opportunity. So I was like, even though it's unpaid, let me just do it anyway so I can get my foot in the door at least.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, go from there.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I did a few days at a time every week.
Oh, so this is whilst, so this wasn't like a summer internship?
No, this was during summer.
Nice.
But I was also, because it was unpaid, like, I needed a job.
Yeah.
So I was working retail also whilst I was doing it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it was like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'd go into this place, and then the rest of the week I was working at my retail job.
Yeah.
To get actual money.
Yeah.
And then, sorry.
No, do you know what? And just on that, like, I think it's a reoccurring theme that we have on this podcast, and it's that there's no give me's. Like, you have to invest the time to these things. And, you know, there are people who might listen to this and they might not have, you know, a lot of income, and they're like, how can I take a free internship? Well, you know, you've worked and you've done the internship. I listened to a podcast recently, Diary of a CEO, and Stephen Bartlett was talking to Brian Armstrong, the CEO of Coinbase.
Yeah,
and he was working at Airbnb, and he started Coinbase on the side. And Stephen Bartlett's like, if you're working at Airbnb and you didn't do it in company time, because if you did it in company time, then there's like intellectual property and like Airbnb would have owned it. He's like, where did you find the time to do it? And he's like, I worked 7 till 12, 3 or 4 nights a week. And then on a Sunday, I'd work 7-8 hours. And he's like, you don't have much of a social life. Yeah. I'm not saying that people shouldn't have a social life, but there are sacrifices that need to be made sometimes in order to, you know, progress, shall I say.
There's one thing I will say, if you look at the backstory, or I guess the, you know, biography of many people who are successful, one thing they will always tell you is that for certain periods in their lives, friends were not a thing, and money was not a thing. Those two things tend to be a lot more. Some people obviously were born into money, so it's a bit different.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people that are successful, those two things tend to be a staple.
Yeah,
tend to be a staple. So, you know, for me, it was. I can't lie, I was struggling. Because I still, even though I had no money, like I still had to pay for my transport to London. And from where I live, it's like what.
It's not cheap.
Like, yeah, it's like £25 per day.
Mad.
And so, like, you know, as I said, I was working three, 4 days still in retail. Again, it wasn't that much money, and I was getting paid monthly, so it was a struggle for a while. But you know, now looking back, I thank God I did that.
Man, yeah.
Because the other internship I did, long-term internship I did later on, I got that thanks. Mainly thanks to doing
the experience that you had. And was that one paid?
Yeah, that one was paid.
So you said you did 4 years. Was that in the summer of year three that one?
What's it called? I did my first year uni, retook.
And then
my second internship was after uni.
Okay.
And that was just over a year ago.
Okay.
So that was the main one which really made me decide what I wanted to do in terms of what part of finance I wanted to be in. And how I need to.
So, that's the question I was going to ask. So you're getting to the end of your third year. Obviously, you said that the internship helped to shape what you wanted to do. Do you have an idea what you want to go into as you're finishing university?
So,
do you have a job lined up? Like, do you have that internship lined up, or does it come after?
So the internship came in my final year.
Okay.
And that came about in, what's it called? December.
Okay.
Sometime. So I got it quite early on, thankfully.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I had no idea what I wanted to do specifically. All I knew was I wanted to go into finance. And you know, I find that universities tend to push you into either tax, audit, or the stereotypical investment banking. And I knew tax was boring. I knew audit was boring. Investment banking, I kind of wanted to go into it since I had already somewhat done that. I'd done the internship. And also I'd done during COVID, because obviously COVID was peak for internships.
Yeah,
people lost internships and everything.
Yeah.
I did some online ones. I think I did two online ones, one for Citibank and one for this other company. I can't remember.
How did you find them for anybody who's potentially, you know, looking at internships? Sorry to put you on the
spot. No, it's all good. If you're someone who's struggling to find internships, I don't know if they're still doing these programs, but a lot of good companies were doing online internships, and it's a very good way of showing, one, showing enthusiasm for, you know, the subject. If you're not doing anything over summer, it's not good to have a gap in your CV. So this is a very good filler, and also you can get as much as you would take from it. You know, so it actually does help. It does give you good information, and you know, I'm not gonna lie, you can BS on your CV a bit with it. I learned this. Obviously, do some supplemental reading on the side. But if you learn something from your reading on the side, you know, say that you learn it from this thing. But yeah, it was definitely worth doing. I think the was it Bright Network or something? I think they were the people who went through. Yeah, who I went through. Yeah.
And I think I saw what. So is that internship you did for like 6-7 months?
So this, the in-person one I did over 6-7 months.
Okay.
Yes, that was that one.
Okay.
So that one, again, I went through another scheme which helps people to get internships.
Okay, great.
And that was through the 100 Black Interns.
Okay.
But I think they're called 1,000 Black Interns now.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. So we'll link that. We'll link that. And obviously it's for, you know, people of colour.
Yeah, it is. But I will say there are, I think there's some for women, there's some for BAME groups in general.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a lot of things out there to help. Or even people who come from low income backgrounds.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them for people like that. So,
okay,
you know, if you fall under those groups, I definitely think check it out and have a look at it, because it's worth doing.
Yeah, and, you know, on that, you know, you're probably one of the youngest guests we've had. You know, typically we've had people that have, gone through several roles. But like you said, you've been out of university probably 1 or 2 years, which is completely fine. And it means it's quite fresh. So with that first internship you did, how did you find it?
So I think if you're going...
This is the in-person one, shall I say.
Yeah. So if you're going into the world of work, one thing you very much need to realise is that university, gave you an understanding of what it is you're getting into, what you're about to get into, but you don't know shit. Like, you're going to go in there, you're going to be a novice who doesn't know anything. And I think for me, again, I hate being someone who doesn't know things, and I hate being someone who's not the best at things.
Yeah.
And so it was really tough for me beforehand. I was thinking, what if I'm trash? Like, what if I flop? What if I flop something big?
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Especially because, again, I came from not the best place.
Yeah.
And you know, you come to these places, and most of the people went to either private school or grammar school, or again, top unis. And even though I went to top uni, like, it's a lot of these people went to Cambridge. So
yeah.
There's a difference. And so, you know, you get.
But do you feel like it was reflected in the way they treated you?
No. See, that's
okay,
the thing.
Good.
This is all thing I was thinking about before I actually got in.
Yeah.
But once you get in there, it's actually, you will actually find that a lot of these people are way nicer not when it comes to work, but I'll get to that.
Yeah.
They're way nicer on a personal level than you'd actually think. And you might think, I'll have nothing in common with them. And it's true, there will be lots of things you have, you know, differences with, but
you're all humans at the end of the day.
Exactly.
You're going to be able to connect on some level, especially if you're a sociable person. Like, for me, I always like make the joke, like, I could genuinely make a friend with like a brick wall, because I'll find something in common. Look, it's hard. I'm hard. It's flat. Well, I'm not even flat.
Pause.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, damn. You got me. But yeah, sorry. Yeah. So you said, you were pleasantly surprised by the way they treated you on a personal level.
Yeah.
From a work aspect, what is it that the internship involved? Like, what was your job title, I suppose, apart from intern? Like,
so I was an investment solutions analyst.
Okay.
So it's essentially what I've gone into now.
And what does an investment solutions analyst, what does that entail?
So investment solutions is basically investor relations, which is dealing with clients, you know, sorting out all the client database, client information, all that stuff. And if they have any inquiries, they go through you.
Yeah.
And then also it's fund performance. So you tend to, however your funds are doing. So at the time I was at a private credit firm. So people invest their money and then you reinvest it into mm-hmm. other things mm-hmm. and try to grow their money essentially.
Yeah.
Through that.
Yeah.
And so we track the performance of the fund. So it was lots of maths, lots of dealing with people in person or even through email and over the phone sometimes. Zoom.
Being able to explain what was going on with the fund performance, etc.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that.
So it was a lot of that and I got to do a bit of everything basically.
Okay,
so I
nice.
Got to deal with the numbers, I got to deal with the actual databases with the clients,
mm-hmm.
Which turns out I don't think I was actually meant to be able to do because okay. Because there's some qualifications you actually need to do to do that, but it's not
we've not put the company.
Yeah, it's fine. But yeah, like it was one of the, I think for me in terms of how my career is going now and how I think it will go in the future, I think it was one of the best experiences I've ever had in terms of that. But then obviously there's other aspects which aren't the best, and you know, as I said, one of the great things about retail is that it puts you in a position where you realize that to a lot of people, you ain't nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're an intern or one of the juniors in one of these place finance firms, a lot of times people will make you feel that way when they're stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to firm it. You know, it's one of them ones. You just have to take on the chin and move on.
Be resilient.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like I've had a few experiences which funnily enough, I made videos about on my TikTok, and mm-hmm. a lot of people were just like, "Oh, how could you take that? How'd you allow that? Blah blah blah. You should have said this. Should have done that." And it's like, when it's easy to say all of this stuff when you're not in the not in that situation, but then when you're actually there, it's completely different.
So this is a nice segue. So how long have you been doing social media, shall we say?
So I've been doing it for the last 3 to 4 months, I guess.
Months so quite new.
Yeah.
And obviously you said that in your TikTok videos, you know, you're talking about some of the BS or shit that you've had to go through at work. Is that what inspired you to do it, or you know, was there another concept?
So what actually inspired me is actually quite, it's something I've thought about for a long time actually. It wasn't even working that put me in this mindset. But okay, I'm 24 years old, and I make enough money that I could have a CLA right now and I'd still be calm. Like, I wouldn't be struggling. Anything. Mm-hmm. My life would still be calm.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever I see a 24-year-old who's black driving a nice car, the first thing that comes to mind is he's a scammer or a drug dealer.
Mm.
Because that's what the people who I was around when I was younger, growing up, or you know, even now, a lot of the times from where I'm from, the people driving those sorts of cars, that's what they do. And so it's, and I think also in a lot of media, when you see black people who are doing well for themselves, they tend to be celebrities or, you know, athletes or things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, I just kind of wanted to show people that, you know, black people can do other things other than entertainment.
Black people can make it legitly.
Exactly.
Most black people do make it legitly,
of course,
it's shifting the narrative,
yeah,
essentially, and doing that through social media.
Exactly.
Similar to what we're doing here as well.
Pretty much, you
know? Yeah. Although we're all inclusive, by the way, so we don't just, you know, speak to black people.
This was one of the main reasons I wanted to come on to your podcast, because I think it's very important for people to see that, okay, I don't have to be the greatest athlete. I don't have to be, you know, I don't have to go into illegal activities
in order
to make it in this world. Like, there's actually a lot of things I can go, different avenues I can go into.
100%.
And I think that was the main thing I wanted to show with my TikToks, was I kind of wanted to change or be a cog that helps change the image of black men in the media, essentially.
Nice. And so let me just pick your brain on this. I know that we're coming up to time, but I'm a big fan of TikTok. Actually, I say I'm a big fan. I don't have TikTok because I think it's too addictive.
It is.
But for those aspiring to be like TikTokers, how long does it take to put a video together?
It depends. So I think it helps a lot if you're someone who records themselves and then speak.
Okay.
It cuts down on time because I used to do voiceover content. So I'd record stuff, or like my journey to work or different things, and then I would voiceover what I was doing, which takes a lot of time.
Mm.
So it depends on what sort of content you want to make.
Yeah.
But half an hour.
Okay, and for any people looking to get into TikTok, what would be your advice, you know, to get them started?
Just start, honestly.
Just start.
Social media is something me and my friend tried to start when you were like 13, and then it flopped because of someone deleted the account. And since then, we always thought, we could have done it, we could have been big, but we never went back into it. So just start, no matter what. Like, you might not have money, you might not have the facilities, but just do it.
And then you'll figure it out as you go, right? And when you're recording your videos, do you literally just use your phone, or using a microphone, any kind of gadgets?
I literally use my phone. And a lot of times, you know, well, I recently bought a mic, but I need to get a new one because it's a bit trash.
Mm.
But yeah, just use your phone, use your friends' phones. If you know somebody has a camera, use that. But
And how do you edit them?
I use this app called InShot on my phone. So literally everything is done through my phone.
Yeah.
I use this app called InShot. You got to pay for it. But it's a very good app.
There's nothing like investing in yourself.
Honestly.
That's what I always say.
Like, it's the best way to do things.
Okay. So I'm just aware of the time. So I think we've got up to date on what you do for work. I suppose you kind of touched on it, but you know, what did the next 5 years hold for Jesse Praise?
For me,
what's your goals? Yeah,
I think that first of all, I want to have at least 3 properties.
Come on!
Right now, I'm in the middle of trying to, you know, work a few things out to get my first.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I want to have 3 properties. I want, by the age of 30, I want to have $1 million in assets, you know, altogether.
Blood,
I know it's a lot, but the thing is, if you have one house,
let's
say it's like 250k.
Yeah.
Like, that's 250k worth of assets.
Yeah.
And so
you got to
think about it in a different way. And if I miss, hey, I'm still getting close.
Yeah, 100%.
But that's what I want to do with that. In terms of work, I hope to be by then maybe a senior VP, senior vice president. And in terms of social media, I hope to at least be on 200k YouTube for subscribers, and maybe on TikTok too.
We're going to bookmark that. And if he is, he's coming back on here.
Of course.
And there's going to be no PA because we're going to remember. He started from here. Remember people. That's fantastic, bro. I love to hear that, to see that. You know, just one more time, do you want to plug the socials for the listeners as we come to the end here?
Yes. So again, I'm Jesse Praise on YouTube and Jesse Praise _ on TikTok.
How many followers do we have so far?
So I think on TikTok I've got just under 6,500.
Jeez, okay.
On YouTube I've got 2,400.
Oh, mate.
So I'm growing.
The first 1,000 is always the most difficult to get.
Do you know what's mad? I had up until 3 weeks ago, I only had 70 subscribers on YouTube.
Wow.
And in the past 3 weeks, I've grown to 2,000.
Just through we're going to have to take that offline because I'm actually about to start releasing some clips. I think there's going to be some great sound bites from this episode as well. Jesse, this has been great, you know. You're still very young in your career, but it sounds like you've done a lot. You've had a lot of different experiences, and it's, you know, it's molding you into the person that you want to be today. There was so much more we could have covered.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that we've not been able to get into everything, but that always leaves room for more and more episodes. But with that, guys, you know, for those of you who've gotten to this point of the podcast, please like, subscribe, share. Before I let the listeners go, Jesse, are there any final comments from you?
I love this conversation. I'm not going to lie.
Mate,
it's been fun. It's definitely been a good podcast.
Yeah, man. Look, happy to have you on. And with that, it's been Vibes and Tribes. Over and out.